everyone. So we're going to begin with 8000 Wisconsin Avenue. The project is at site plan, and as you know, it came to you several times in the previous phases of the project. We will do 10-15 minute presentation, particularly focus on the comments that you got from the panel the last time. And then we'll also do a vote at the end and talk about public benefits. If you'd like to introduce yourselves, or if you'd just like to begin.
I'm Bob Dalrymple. I'm with Linnows and Blocker, land use counsel for the project.
Matt Gordon with Linnows and Blocker as well.
Carlos Montenegro, counsel for the owner.
I'm Andy Jackowski with SKN Architecture.
So you all are should be pretty familiar with this project. This is, I think, the fifth, maybe sixth time we've been back before you. So your fingerprints are all over the design of this project. And thank you for your input. I think it's become a better project as a result of this process. So thank you. Just to remind you that the project is it's at 8000 Wisconsin Avenue, as it says on the screen. It's a fairly large project in terms of the size. It's a complicated project, especially in terms of satisfying the design guidelines, simply because it's bookended by two approved projects, one of which is under construction, the other of which will soon be, I guess. But those two projects and approvals went through before the new sector plan and before the new zoning was put in place, and certainly before the design guidelines and this process was put in place. So how this project relates to those has been a bit of a challenge in working with the design guidelines, but I think that we feel pretty good about where the project is at this point in time. It's about 430,000 square feet, 441 dwelling units. Very importantly, I think, is to remind you that this is a project that's proposing 25% MPDUs, and there are certain regulatory standards that go in favor of a project moving expeditiously through the site. I don't know that five or six times before DAP was envisioned in that process, but again, I think that it has been complicated for all the reasons that I've said, which I think is why we've seen you so often. So with that, I think, we pretty much had this down to a couple of issues that you wanted us to take a look at in moving this from sketch plan to site plan. And that's what we focused on in making our latest submission. And so with that, I'll turn it over to Andy, and he can take it from here.
Sure. Thanks, Bob. I think, just reading through the comments, the two major concerns were really sort of reduce the bulk of the project, either by reducing the density and or reducing the perceived bulk. That was one of the major comments. And the second comment was the connection to 7900. Either applying the full design guideline setback or exploring, a vertical slip between the two buildings. So with those kind of comments in mind, we pushed the project further along. So this was, I apologize, I mislabeled the submission. It was actually in June, but we did submit in June, and this goes back to the second comment about sort of the vertical connection with 7900 and how that related. At that time of the submission, this slit was slit was coplanar with.
You can also use the mouse to point.
All right. I'll just, anyway, so yeah, it was coplanar there. Just as a sort of a calculation, we did. We wanted to understand sort of the square footage calculation if we did, apply the setback, and it was a significant loss to the project. It kind of made the project not viable from an economic standpoint. So, setting back 45 feet, taking the burden solely on this property, without the other property setting back, it was a 13% loss in residential FAR, and a full 60-foot setback would be a 17.5, close to 18% loss of FAR. So, the MPDU, providing the MPDU is a very important thing that we're trying to do for the that said, just reminding everyone the existing conditions of 7900, you know, this building is kind of, you know, we've kind of said this all along, it's kind of having it both ways. It's a corner building, and it and it's a party line building, a party wall building. So, you know, just to remind everyone, these balconies are 16 feet in, are 16 feet in depth, and there's a 40-foot blank wall. You know, this is currently under construction. It's up to about the third or fourth floor. I just walked past it yesterday. So, you know, how do we engage that? How do we deal with that? So what we did is we did push that notch back even further. It's subtle, but I think it's effective. You know, we're trying to maintain a viable unit, a viable residential footprint behind it. So we didn't want to chew it too much, but we think we could provide this much relief to allow that vertical slit to become more of a recessed plane and provide that shadow line that we've been talking about, and allow the neighbor to have more exposure on this balcony. So this is a view of the current alignment from Wisconsin Avenue, and I'll jump to the back side, and this is the current alignment from the courtyard side, from Woodmont Avenue. So it's much more in line. It allows that building, the 7900 project, to have those corner balconies. So I think it's done, you know, we've done as much as we could to mitigate that between the two. And here's the current design. It's similar, but it is pushed back, so there is more exposure on that balcony from Wisconsin. These are some views just walking around the building. This was the submission back in June, and this is sort of the progression of the design.
Let me see that. Yeah.
But maybe the aspect ratio changed a little bit, but
you should compare apples and apples. Yeah. And oranges and oranges.
Oranges and oranges. Well, I have the two views on. Going around. Here's the footprint that was submitted back in June. You know, the question was reducing the bulk and density of the perceived bulk and density. And so I think we've done that as we've developed the footprint. Here's where it is today. We've been carving it up. Some of that bulk that we had along here, we've transferred it over here on the lower levels behind the core to make that usable space, so it's not really perceived from the street. And these are sort of the menu, I guess, the three major points that we've pushed the design to reduce the bulk. We called it out as A. So on Woodmont, we've pushed that back and we've tapered the building towards the plaza. We've pushed that even a little bit further back from before. We've let that tower stand prouder. That engages Woodmont, the vertical piece that separates those sort of the planes, the layered planes on the sides. The second part is that we thought this was important, on the plaza side, we've aligned with 7900 as much as we could. So we've pushed that back. If you can see where we were before, I think this is actually going to help a lot. We were pretty far out, and we were creating sort of a, you know, it was a sort of a tight condition against that balcony. We've pushed that entire thing back to come more in line with it, and then allowing this to breathe and that balcony to breathe more. And then again, the C is the sort of pushing those two, the stitch back, pushing those planes back to allow those balconies to breathe. And you can see that here in this diagram, or this aerial massing. So the A, the taper, B, the plane comes back on the courtyard side, and then C, the stitch, you know, gets recessed even further to allow 7900 to allow those corner balconies. This is a view of St. Elmo from the original June submission, and this is sort of the evolution. And here you can see that plane aligning with 7900 on the courtyard, so pushing that back.
Can you go back to that?
Sure. So again, the parties is still the same. You know, I think everyone appreciated this move. It's a single loaded piece. It's a very slender piece. We have lowered it. It's always been lowered, you know, three floors from the original piece to create a sort of an iconic moment at the terminus at ending St. Elmo's Street, and you know, kind of standing proud over the new plaza that's being created. Again, this is a view from June. You can see that plane, how it sticks out, and then how we've kind of how we have pushed it back so it's more in line, it's more coplanar with the setting up here. That's sort of the presentation. If you have any questions, comments, it's been it's subtle, but I think the subtle moves have paid off to, you know, in lightening the building. One of the things was capturing the space behind the, I'll show it here, just capturing this space behind the core. Was able to, we freed up some of the FAR, we shifted the FAR around, so you don't really see it from the street. It pushes it back. It's almost, it's you don't even perceive it really from the public realm. But it activates usable FAR without providing the bulk on the street.
Well, let me ask you just a couple questions.
Mm-hmm.
What is the FAR?
We're 400 and...
No, but by most of this. This...
We have 3.0 and then a small portion of 5.0 that was incorporated into it.
But that's what it's mapped as. It's not what the actual FAR is, right?
Yeah.
So what's the actual FAR?
Yeah, it's about a 10. But that includes the MPDUs, which are invisible for purposes, for public policy reasons.
So the actual FAR would be higher? Is that
no,
right?
It'd be lower if you took it out.
The 10 includes the MPDUs, but in terms of how we calculate the FAR, that wouldn't be included in that.
Because about a full two FARs is just MPDUs.
So then let me ask another question. Let me ask it in context with something we hear in several occasions where developer applicants come in and says we can't reduce the mass because the building's not economically viable. So you have a statement here, while the modified mass you reduce is perceivable, it's necessary the site plan continue to reflect a density of 430,000 square feet. Goes on to say, in order for the applicant to deliver 25% of the MPDUs. So you're trying to make an argument as to why the mass can't be reduced. We often get these blanket statements without any backup as to why that happens. And not only for my benefit, but I think for future applicants, I think it would be helpful for us to understand why you can't reduce it for economic reasons. Can somebody explain that to me?
I'll pipe up and I'll let the applicant, you know, respond as well here. But I do know firsthand that providing MPDUs is a real challenge for development organizations, and especially when you're talking 25%, that's a very high percentage. Construction costs continue to go sky high, and so that really makes it challenging to deliver these projects. So in that regard, I do want to commend the applicant for putting forth a plan that provides 25%, but obviously you have to balance that with the design excellence points that you're asking for. So that's the struggle, and I think that's the question that you're asking.
All right, let me naively explore this a little bit further. You're getting to the 25% of those units by getting the increased height, right? That's the trigger that allows you to get there. So if you maintain the same height, proportionally decrease the gross building area, you would still have the same ratio, right? It would be just less numbers, less units, correct? Am I wrong in that?
No, the density, I mean, it's just pure math. I mean, the density, you know, 25% of your project is basically at an economic loss you have to recover that. And the only way to recover that is through the density of the project. So yeah, the height allows us to go, you know, more vertical to pick up that density, but it doesn't, if you lose the density in going up, if you lose your FAR, you're losing the economic base that allows you to provide those MPDUs. I mean, it's just really just a function of pure mathematics. I mean.
Okay, but just follow logic for a second. If you reduce the density to a round number of, say, 400,000 square feet, and I'm not advocating that right now, you would reduce the number of MPDUs as well as you reduce the number of market rate units, wouldn't you? Right. So the ratio would still be the same, wouldn't it?
But you get less MPDUs. They're providing 100 up to 111.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Proportionally, you would reduce them.
But there's fixed cost. I'm not arguing for that. I'm just pointing this out. There's fixed costs that don't go down proportionally. The cost of the land and other things like that. So, which makes it a little bit more challenged. So I understand where you're going with that. But those are the kind of things you have to balance back and forth. But I'll let the applicant talk to that.
Yeah, some
cost
doesn't go down. You know, a lot of things don't go down. The FAR cost per the land's cost into FAR doesn't change. Those are remaining the same. I mean, you just don't make money. 25% MPDU just loses money. As a matter of fact, it's a very challenging project.
But
it's a super challenging project for us and our firm. Raise financing for a building like that. If you go less density, it'll kill our project.
But if they both go down proportionally, the MPDUs, and then your height also starts to come down, right?
I'm saying if you maintain the height, right?
Well, the MPDUs, don't the MPDUs give you some of the height?
Give you some height.
They're getting the height through.
You're getting
providing
the height because providing.
I realize that. Okay. I realize that.
So if there's less MPDUs, then the height comes down, I think.
But I'm not quite sure that really is an apples-to-apples comparison, because when you do the 25%, it's 15% is required in the, you know, as part of the master plan, as part of the zone. So that's kind of your threshold. What they're doing is an additional 10%, and that 10% is giving them the additional height. And it's not really counting towards their overall density. So I don't know that that's really, it's kind of a wash, except for the height piece of it. They're getting the height to kind of fill the box a little bit higher. But I guess I'm not quite sure.
Well,
the comparison is a little odd because 25% is completely different than I think the normal that we're getting throughout Bethesda, which is the 15.
I understand.
Okay.
That.
I'm not quite sure where you're going.
Well,
with
if you go back to the plan, where you have the plan area reduction. Keep on going back where it's in one of your earlier slides. So if you were to reduce the building by, say, the purple area, that would cut out 53,000 square feet, right? But still, and you would maintain the height, but you would still maintain a ratio of 25-75 MPDUs, 75% market rate units, wouldn't you?
You're placing the infrastructure burden on fewer units, though.
Yeah. Yes.
You still have to put in all the dry utilities. You still have to build the 3 or 4 story underground garage. You still have to build. You still have all these significant costs to build the project, and it gets distributed over a fewer number of units. So incrementally, it's just.
But you also have less to build, though. Less.
But that's the easy part to build at this point.
Yeah. That. But you also have fewer MPDUs, and that's against the goal that we're trying to accomplish here, which is to maximize MPDUs.
Yeah, that's the balance here. What's more important from a public policy standpoint, the design of the building, design excellence, or the provision of affordable housing units? I don't have the answer to that.
Well, that's not what
our role is to review.
I guess the other question that I have is what's the point? I mean, I'm not following where you're going with this. I mean, it just seems to be kind of arbitrarily going after the density, whereas I think that we've addressed all of the design comments in trying to max out the density here, including the maximum number of MPDUs that we can provide, because we think it is a public benefit to be able to do that. And I think we've been able to accomplish that in a way that is consistent with the design guidelines. So I'm kind of wondering where we are with this conversation.
But there is one part of the design guidelines that's missing. It's separation of towers from property to property.
Well, we're an internal lot up against two projects that did not have to go through this same process. So, it is a challenge, no doubt about it. But it's a challenge where we're trying to address the design guidelines for the entire block with an internal lot. And it's not a perfect world. And certainly when you're squeezed between two projects that didn't have to go through the same process, it is a challenge.
Especially if you would have to have separation on the left side as well.
Right. Yes.
And they are only providing 12.5 MPDU in their projects.
Mm-hmm.
Their grandfather from the past.
I mean, this is a big block, and I think it would be nice if the entire block was designed with the separation in the middle so that the massing of that entire block was less. But I think that's a pretty key point, is that it's stuck in the middle of the change, you know, the creation of the guidelines in the middle of the overall project of the block.
Not to mention the fact that 7900 went to great effort to provide a through block connector.
Yeah.
By the powers that be at that time, and it was considered the break between two halves of the block. So.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to reinvent the wheel at this point, I'm not sure is productive, in my humble opinion. I think personally the client has, or the applicant has responded very well to what we have asked them to do over the last 7 years. And I'm sorry. I think I have to look back where we were at the beginning and where we are now. And I think the building that you're ending up with, in terms of responsiveness to the adjacencies, in terms of architectural design, in terms of the very satisfactory things that are happening along the back street, I'm having a brain freeze.
Woodmont.
Which has always been the most positive aspect of the project. But I think in my opinion, I think you've achieved what we asked you to achieve. I'm not sure a reduction of FAR is in our purview. We're trying to talk about compliance, and I think we've all accepted the fact, not all, but I think we've been over the fact that the 45-foot separation being all on one property is not exactly a fair proposition.
You know, that's an interesting comment you made, though. Because, you know, every one of these drawings, like this drawing, for instance, we're looking at it without seeing, you know, this side of Wisconsin. And so, you know, who is ever going to have that view? I'm not sure. But as a pedestrian walking along Wisconsin, you are definitely going to perceive a break where the passage goes through. And so you are, you know, at that realm, you are having a break, a separation of tower and buildings. So if you do have the long view from the neighborhood over buildings, you know, is kind of the question, is where that break happens. And I think because of the heights of the buildings and because of the work that they have done, I think there is sort of an attempt to give you some variation so that you kind of get the perception of a break between buildings without the big physical break. And I think they are caught in the middle of this transition of the new master plan to the old zoning. And so, you know, I think actually, you know, I would have some comments about elevations, but I think is a set of massing, I think it's doing a good job. And it's better than what it was, clearly. And I think on the western side, I think it's much better than to where it was.
And I think you can see in this left-hand picture there, the tower 7900 and the lower part, but still a tower on 8000, creates a void visually that aligns with the through-block connector. So I think it's, from an urban design massing standpoint, it's doing a pretty good job of reflecting that all the way from top to bottom.
I think it is better from by standing back a few feet from Wisconsin in the back. We can tell it's subtle, but actually you can tell the slit. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think, you know, all along, you know, we've created this. I don't want to, you know, forget the lower device. You know, we've created these pavilions on the ground floor that relate, you know, obviously to the downstream scale. We've limited it to three stories specifically to avoid conflict with the portal that goes through to the mid-block connection. So there's a lot of, you know, again, when we originally designed it, it was a kit of parts. It was, you know, the base, the glass tower that sort of grounds and then shifts and engages the street, and then the series of floating planes that, with the gridded pattern and the balconies that, you know, sort of mitigate the massing between the two different buildings. So it is a transition piece. It is a sort of a soldier building for Bethesda, and you know, we're excited to see it move forward.
Andy, one of the issues that we've been dealing with, and the board has been dealing with, is the step back from the base, and there's been a lot of attention focused on buildings that sort of step back at the ground floor and then go up and then project back out, and it's almost a meme. And so you haven't really talked a lot about how that's working on both sides. Could you focus specifically on what your design is doing in terms of essentially a section through the facade down to the street?
So
starting at the bottom,
coming, you know, so at the base, it is at the property line, if you will, or at the right of way setback, the new right of way, the Wisconsin right away grew a little bit, and again we are accommodating for the BRT on the corner, the station on the corner. So the building comes up three levels and then it sets back, and then it comes up.
How much does it set back?
It sets back, I believe it's like 10 feet, I believe, at the base, and then it sets back even further at the corner.
So the part that projects, and it looks like the sort of the precast or whatever, concrete sort of, that's the part that projects most forward, and that's at the street line.
No, it doesn't come back all the way. It comes out.
Just at the base.
At the base, it's at the right of way.
It's at the right of way line, and then you go up three stories, and then the black part is 10 feet back.
It goes back.
And then it looks like those project back out. How much do those project back out?
4 or 5 feet. And again, it's mitigating because if we did push it all the way back. Here specifically, I think what we're trying to do is mitigate the planes, because 7900 is at the old right of way, as is 8000A. So if we did come all the way back, we're trying to, you know, align with the faces as best as we can, without being egregious, I guess. Because I mean, this is all the way out at the right of way up, you know, 17 stories.
I mean, you know, the intent of that. And then the image on the right is looking south of Wisconsin. Yeah.
The image on
yes.
the right is looking south
of Wisconsin.
Yeah, south.
I mean, I think, you know, the intent is to sort of break up the wall, and you know, I think the points that folks have made about the through block connection, you know, providing that separation and breaking it up, I think, are valid. If there was a way to, I mean, this still, so this is very, I mean, this is a tower just sort of by its dimension, but this reads as very solid. And I'm wondering if there were, when you were working with this, if there were things, is this the new design?
That's the old one.
If there were things that you looked at to sort of, you know, use your, the balconies, which are, so if this is 4 feet, are the balconies another 4 feet? So do the balconies come out to be coplanar with the base?
They're in the base, yeah.
I mean, I think that may be, I mean, I would ask for the depth to, you know, think about that and comment on that, because that's absolutely something that has been an issue. And, you know, is the design that you're showing compelling enough to come all the way back out? Or, you know, does the facade need to scoop back 4 feet?
But if it scoops back, then you're exposing all these edges of these other planes,
right?
Right. And to me, capturing the more or less build to line of the buildings to the left and to the right, I think makes sense, and then having the middle part go up as high as you want to go. So I think that massing works. And I think the separation that exposes the corner balconies makes sense with that tall white, I guess, precast element that separates. So I support the massing, given the fact that they're not able to have the complete separation. Because I think they have to push and pull their facade in order to not expose weird sides of unanticipated edges of other buildings.
Exactly.
So I appreciate that. I think it's really unfortunate that 79,000 7,900. That's a very long street. It's really an unfortunate building, frankly. I mean, the through passage, notwithstanding, because the building is incredibly long, and it's really...
It's about 2.5 times the length of our building. So.
And it puts the onus on your property to have to solve all the problems of all the mistakes that were made on those two buildings. You know, I mean, I appreciate that concern. I think the Woodmont side is 100% better. Here, I think creating these two stitches, as you call them, really helps dramatically from the previous submission.
The only part of the building that's at the right of way is the three-story sort of piece. Everything else is pushed back, set back. Intended to mitigate the planes of the different buildings. And then, you know, going back to the Woodmont, I think, you know, it was a lot. Again, the right of way is really the three-story pieces, and then the tower is near the right of way. But everything else is tapered back.
I just wanted to make sure that the DAP discussed that, because, I mean, that's probably the most popular issue from the board's standpoint in terms of a project, because before them, they're going to look at, you know, that how does it set back and how does a cantilever back out and why. And I think explaining why is important. And so I think
how it, you know, how it meets the other buildings on either side, mm-hmm. is very important.
Well, one of the intriguing things about the situation is that were one want to increase the setback for that segment from Wisconsin Avenue, you could move the back wall back out to where it was in our last submission and not align with 7900 and accomplish the goal. My point would be that I don't think that would be a positive thing.
No.
Along Wisconsin Avenue, and therefore I'm supporting where it is. I mean, it's just, we have an option, so we're making an honest decision here. And
yep.
I think the decision to leave it where it is probably the right decision.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we think that this project merits, you know, a lot of design points. We only need 10, so that's what we'll ask for.
I know you came in late, Amanda, do you want to comment on the budget? Naomi, you said you didn't. Okay, great. So just in summary, it sounds like we do have one panel member who is concerned about the bulk and the FAR of the project, but others seem to feel like the massing has really resolved well based on the input. And staff was particularly asking about the step back and cantilever question, and it sounds like the majority of the panel feels that the masting is appropriate to meet the two adjacent buildings. So those are the major overall comments. In terms of public benefit points, I'd like to see if folks support the minimum required, which is 10 exceptional design points. Does everyone agree with that? 1, 2, 3, 4.
If I could just add, I do want to congratulate the project for getting to the 25% in PDUs.
Right.
I think that's really great.
Thank you.
I think the Woodmont side is just going to be really great. I do have real reservations about Wisconsin. I think you made some improvements. I do want to take exception to one of my colleagues' points that...
He'll figure.
The EAP does have a purview over commenting on density. You know, one of the statements in either the guidelines or the master plan is the guidelines are intended to regulate density. So I think we do have that purview to make that comment in the future. I would also really ask really all applicants in the future, just don't come in with a blanket statement that says it's just not economically viable to reduce it. Prove it to us.
Right.
Prove it to us in the future.
I think the project wouldn't go forward if it didn't have the 25.
Yeah. I would add that to the comments, just say on balance.
Right.
You know, balancing the public policy benefits of providing 25% affordable housing units justifies the...
Well, that tips the balance for me, that's for sure.
Massive density.
If it weren't 25, then we'd be having a whole different discussion.
I agree.
As far as I'm concerned. And I think in the future, we need to have people nail down the FARs. In other words, what's allowed, where the FAR is, and what it means in terms of the overall bulk of the building on the sites. We need this sort of the statistics on that.
Absolutely.
Because otherwise we're just coming in and we're just looking at skins, frankly.
Okay. All right, good. So we'll add that balancing the public policy benefit to reach 25% MPUs makes the density and bulk of the building justifiable. So we had 4 folks who supported the public benefit points at 10.
No, I do also.
You do as well. And then, Chiaojoy, did you say yes as well?
Yes.
So we have everyone supports that. So,
I mean, 10 points is a pretty low bar.
That's right.
Yes.
That's right. Plan a few
things.
So now,
that's right.
So now we'd like to do the straw vote. So we're going to do those in support, but with conditions, and then those who do not support. So first, who supports the project? Oh, everyone. Okay.
Yep.
That was easy.
Yes.
All right.
Thank you. Well, it's not easy.
Appreciate the input. This has been a challenging site.